Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, the co-author of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging, relevant, and equitable learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, I'm talking with Jermaine Myrie, CEO of Mentor, a nationwide champion for the expansion of quality youth mentoring relationships across the United States. As CEO, Jermaine helps to lead a diverse cross-sector mentoring movement working to ensure that all kids and young people grow in the presence of caring adult mentor relationships. Jermaine, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Greg, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Oh, we love having you here, Jermaine. Now, listeners of this pod know that we at Remaking Tomorrow take daily inspiration from Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, the host of public television's long-running program, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And Fred said often, quote, "It's through relationships that we learn best and grow best." In your own learning and growing, Jermaine, how have you felt the power of human relationships? And how do those experiences inform your work as CEO of Mentor?
So first, I'll say that to be on a podcast inspired by Fred Rogers is almost goosebump worthy, because growing up, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was central to my youth development. And so I almost felt like I had a relationship with the land of make-believe and all the various field trips that Mr. Rogers went on. And I was excited to watch every single day. And realizing, to your question, how important it was that respect, curiosity, enthusiasm, and also the idea that in our own disappointments, relationships can bring us back to who we are and what we ought to be, which are just curious humans. And so relationships, not just in my day-to-day here at Mentor, but overall in my life's journey, has been central to my development as a curious reader, as a curious learner, as someone who sought to have conversations and still do with folks that frankly aren't in my neighborhood, but are in different neighborhoods, so that I could better understand the world more broadly. And so I think relationships affords us the ability to broaden our mindset and therefore broaden our approach to a series of the things that we'll come across in life's journey.
And Jermaine, like any relationship, mentorship, it's a two-way street, right? There are benefits that each person is receiving. Even though when we think about mentorship, it's typically an adult and a young person, right? There's a bit of a power imbalance there, but there's an exchange of benefits for each of those people involved in that mentorship relationship. So what is it that young mentees receive from being in that relationship with a caring adult?
At its core, mentorship is that intergenerational conversation. And I think what a mentee receives, and as a mentee myself, you look for the wisdom and the learnings of your mentor, not necessarily as a full cure for any challenge that you might bring forward, but as an exemplar of what might come up, and so you can orient yourself correctly. I think also there is this idea of safe space, that in that mentor-mentee relationship, you create a safe space so that you can journey in being yourself, not mimicking who or what your mentor is, but really trying to find identity in yourself. So that wisdom, that lived experience a mentee often receives, and I think it goes both ways. There are mentors that will say to others, they learn even more from their mentee than otherwise. But I think that wisdom, that lived experience, that safe space, that advocacy and agency are all things that a mentee receives in a mentor-mentee relationship.
Having been in both of those relationships myself, I agree with what you say, that the mentor is also receiving so much, because identity development doesn't stop when you reach age 13 or age 18, or the longing for a safe space or the opportunity to learn and be curious and still wonder doesn't go away. I'm sure you've heard mentors tell you all sorts of extraordinary things about their relationships with their mentees.
They do, quite honestly. And from everything from some new language or technology that they're being informed by, or how to think differently. I almost get the sense when I listen to mentors reflect that they're somewhat going through professional development. a professional development of what it's like to live in the current. Because oftentimes as adults or as seasoned individuals, you look at experiences past to really guide you. And I think mentees tend to bring us current and bring the relationship of having folks learn how to live in the moment and not simply live in the past.
And Jermaine, Mentor as an organization is working in all sorts of places across America. Places in terms of states and cities, but places also in terms of schools, neighborhoods, businesses. So let's turn first to schools. And schools, of course, are places filled with caring adults. Yes, those teachers, and also the office secretary, the custodian, the cafeteria workers, all of those caring adults who interact in some way with the kids in their care, the kids in their schools. So what are some ways that schools can close mentoring gaps for kids, and how are you supporting schools in robust ways?
You're right. Being a former educator and classroom teacher myself, I know firsthand of the day-to-day journey that a teacher goes through and showing up and having young people come at your door looking for your guidance, right, and your support in a variety of ways, and some that are organic to education and others that are outside of that. What we've been looking at in terms of our relationships with schools, and actually this is more current, is we've been talking to a lot of schools around intentionally having someone within a school or within a district that is focused on mentoring services. So, for example, our work in California and our work more recently right now in Newark, New Jersey, has really bring forward this idea of director of mentoring services as a position that could augment, support, bring greater focus to the work that districts are seeking to do in bringing relationships into the district that are powerful, that are transformational for students and having intentional outcomes in the communities as well. So we are strengthening not just the curriculum that districts are looking to put in place that are very much relationship-centered, human-centered, but really also articulating and orienting this idea of committed resources to mentoring and mentoring partnerships.
And Jermaine, you mentioned that you yourself are a teacher. You started your career as a middle school English teacher in Boston. And so when you think about your younger self, what advice would you have given to yourself to center mentorship? When I think of the teachers who are listening to this podcast, how is it that I as a teacher can better center mentorship in the things that I'm expected to do every day?
When I look back and reflect it, you know, as a 21-year-old is when I started in the classroom, very much proximate in age to the students I was teaching and being influencer over. The advice I would offer up is to listen intentionally and understand that ideas germinate from all places. That as an educator, we're looking for students to give us the right answers to our questions. But for us, we as an educator, you often can say there are solutions in imperfect responses and imperfect conversations because we all are imperfect in some way. And so I think a level of patience and intentionality with the idea that the full student ought to be at the center and not just the educated student.
Jermaine, I can picture you watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood all those years ago because of what you just articulated, being deliberate and intentional, listening deeply, recognizing that everyone has something worth giving. So very Fred-like in that response. I love it. Thank you. It's not just schools. It's in our communities, it's in our businesses, it's in our libraries. So what about beyond school? What is it that mentoring is doing to support the coaches or the entrepreneurs to become mentors in communities across America?
Yeah, we are actively engaged in all of those sectors. In the workplace, we are partnering with multinational corporations as they think about how important mentoring is in retaining and recruiting talent. Build programming through what we call our systems innovation work. This work really centers the idea of how to connect new and younger employees with more seasoned employees, but also the specter of having employees get involved in the communities that these organizations are in terms of servicing. We are actively doing that as well with the coaching space as a space that we know, I think, almost on par with teachers. Coaches are just so central to how young people and youth development is really activated now. Everyone, my children as well, is involved in you sports of all sorts, baseball, soccer, you know, ice hockey, everything, right? And coaches have their attention in very unique ways. And so we are actively partnering with a couple of different nonprofits to build frameworks and build a programming that they can use turnkey to train coaches to have a mentoring mindset as they go out into the field and teach young people the rules of a game, but also teach it in a way that it's from a mentoring lens and not simply from a very myopic coaching lens.
Jermaine, makes me think in some ways, every kid benefits from mentoring. Sometimes it's unbeknownst to them because it's a teacher or a coach, as you describe, or a librarian. It's that caring adult who is mentoring that child, even though it's not a formal mentoring relationship. And then there are kids who benefit from that formal mentoring relationship supported by an outstanding organization that's delivering high-quality mentoring. We know in this country that not every kid has access to that. So what are you doing to tackle the challenges for kids who might not have that high-quality mentoring experience?
We know that some of these gaps are created because prospective mentors have said to us they don't know how to get involved, that they don't have time to manage their career and the mentoring perspective, and also bring in greater awareness. So a couple of the quick things that we've done is we've strengthened the ability of our public awareness work. We have historically done a ton of work in bringing awareness around mentoring and the power of mentorship. The Mentoring Connector is a resource that we have built over these last many years that is a ease of use resource that folks can go to and type in what they're interested in, where they are, where they're geographically located, and it gives them a range of opportunities to get involved. So it's very much active. We advocate for private and public sector funding for program expansion to make more programs available, because there's no sense that you have young people talking about the import of mentoring, but do not have a field of folks, a bench, if you will, of folks to step up and become mentors. We've done a lot of work informing the conversation and the populace through not just the Mentoring Connector, but work that we've done, such as Becoming a Better Mentor, that has given the guide and really lowered the barrier for folks who say, I don't know how or what mentoring looks like. It's a real ease of use guide that allows folks to become, in effect, professionally developed in what it looks and feels like to be a good mentor.
This is Greg Baer. I'm talking with Jermaine Myrie, CEO at Mentor. Jermaine, when we talk about mentoring, you know, there's a sense that, like, I'm an adult. There are kids in my life. It might be my own kids, kids in my neighborhood. Like, I know what it means to mentor. And we know that mentoring takes intention. You have to be deliberate about it. And there are ways that mentoring is done well, and there are actually ways that mentoring is done badly. For decades, I think, Mentor has distributed elements of effective practice. Can you distill some of these practices down for our listeners?
Sure. And it's a great time. And actually, the elements of effective practice we've been publishing since 1990, quite a long time ago. And I was still watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So for over three decades, we've tried to get our field to implement what quality research-based practices are. As you suggested, mentoring is simply more than just volunteering or being physically present. It's intentional, and it has certain facilitation methods that we believe makes folks good mentors. You know, any of the elements of effective practice, from the right participants, effective matching strategies, supporting relationships, are all parts of what we talk about. And so it talks about how to recruit the right mentor, what it means to have good matching of mentors and mentees, how to do effective follow-up. And one of the areas that we talk about in the elements of effective practice works on is how to transition a mentoring relationship. Because sometimes people move, they're less available, or a young person moves to a different space. And the way in which we enter a relationship is as important as the way we exit a relationship. And so the elements really gives a roadmap of all of these things. And we have 16 distinct elements in the new Elements of Effective Practice, which will be released in January of 2025. And it's our newest version to talk about those things of what intentional mentoring does. And oh, by the way, we don't just kind of publish this, but we also support the training of mentors. So our affiliates across the country, which we have 24 of, are available as to train and support mentors and organizations that are looking to get involved in young people's lives, and the Elements of Effective Practice as the guidebook, if you will, of how to do that at all effectively.
So let's give everyone that first step. You've mentioned the website, the Elements of Effective Practice, the affiliates that are available across the country. You mentioned Mentoring Connector. Where is it that our listeners can go to take that first step to becoming a mentor? Where do you encourage them to start?
Yeah, you can definitely start on our website, www.mentoring.org. And from there, you can get a view of the Mentoring Connector. You can start to find local organizations that are in your geographical space that are connected to young people, that brings that access and ease of use. And so that is also a place that you can get a sense of the Elements of Effective Practice. The fifth edition is not yet up on the website. These are all open source resources that I'm sharing, so there's no paywall to it, because we want folks to have access to do good and great work in their communities and feel like they're part of the fabric of the growth of their communities.
There's something classic about mentoring. You just mentioned the fifth edition of the Elements of Effective Practice. And along those decades, Mentor has brought attention to relationship-centered schools. You described working with coaches and business leaders. Where is the field of mentoring going? What are you excited about when you think about what's at the edge of doing great mentoring for kids across America?
I think the future of mentoring is focused on well-being. I've been talking a lot recently from an organizational perspective of impacting the well-being and relationship space in our country. We think of well-being as a very distinct, almost a public health issue, which it is primarily. But I really believe at the core of where we ought to be heading and going is not just building up social capital for the sake of some transactional development, if you will. But I believe that there's a real opportunity for mentoring to impact and break up that isolation and disconnect that both young and older folks are feeling across this country, that centering relationships is so fundamental to mentoring and what comes out of mentoring relationships, that I think there's an energy and an excitement that can transform not just individuals, but communities more broadly. So I see our future as one that is intentional about well-being, yes, from a public health perspective and being supportive of it, but also well-being and how people repair families and communities and industry and remake relationships that are built on something more than just a transactional moment, but built upon understanding. So I'm excited and energized to orient the work of that we do, at least, and the construct of mentoring that we think and talk about to really help support a healthier, stronger communities that are fundamentally relationship-centered and human-centered.
Love it. Love it. Jermaine, we've reached the point in the pod that we like to call the lightning round. A couple fun questions. You answer the first thing that comes to mind. You ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
All right. Question number one. When you were a middle school English teacher, what was your favorite lesson or unit of study?
My favorite lesson unit of study was China.
You've coached basketball and baseball. What's the biggest lesson you've taken from sports?
You win big and you lose big sometimes, but always have fun along the way.
What's the best life lesson a mentee has ever taught you?
The best life lesson is how to cry.
Jermaine, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Stay connected. Stay connected to the young person in your home. Stay connected to the young person in your classroom. And understand that you don't have to have all the right answers all the time.
Thanks again to Jermaine Myrie, CEO at Mentor. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.